Let's return to This Week in America. Here's your host, Rick Bratton.
Welcome back, everybody. Coast to Coast, This Week in America. Leadership, the Warrior's Art, second edition by Christopher Kalinda, brings together noted military minds as they examine the crucial role of leadership in combat, relate the lessons learned, and apply this knowledge to the stressful world of business using case studies from Alexander the Great, their post-9/11 wars to illustrate timeless principles of leadership. Christopher D. Kalinda, Ph.D., founder of the Strategic Leaders Academy, works with leaders who want to apply insights from history and military operations to transform their businesses. A West Point graduate, recognized combat leader, and retired Army colonel, he defied conventional wisdom in Afghanistan, where he served for four tours of duty by motivating a large insurgent group to switch sides, the only example of such success in the 20-year history of the war. As a trusted advisor to three four-star generals and two undersecretaries of defense, he became the first American to have both fought the Taliban as a commander in combat and negotiated with them in peace talks. He holds a Ph.D. in war studies from King's College London. Christopher Kalinda, author of Leadership, the Warrior's Art, joins us on This Week in America. Dr. Kalinda, welcome to the program. Great to have you with us.
Thank you, Rick. I really appreciate you having me.
This time is going to go by so quickly. I have so many questions to talk about in the program today. And let's lay the foundation. Let's talk about leadership. If you ask 10 different people, you may get 10 different answers as to what they perceive leadership to be. What is leadership?
Well, leadership means to inspire people to contribute their best to your team's success. And every element of that definition is crucial. So leadership is about inspiration. It's not about coercion. So sometimes leaders use coercion, but that should be an exception. Leaders inspire people to do things voluntarily. So that is one of the difference between leaders, you know, what leaders do and what others do. And by inspiration, I don't mean rah-rah either. This is not about being a cheerleader. This is about providing the vision and connecting emotionally with people so that they are inspired to contribute their best. So we want people contributing their best and most authentic selves. People shouldn't have to become somebody that they're not, fake it until they make it, you know, all of these other goofy sayings. Yes. They should be able to be their best and most authentic selves and to do so for a broader purpose. To support the team's success.
You go into that in great detail, along with a number of experts in your book, Leadership, the Warrior's Art. Somebody may say, geez, it's sort of old school, isn't it, to discuss ancient Roman and Greek ideas of leadership. What am I going to learn from Alexander the Great? And as you dig into this, there are really some valuable lessons from history, aren't there?
I think so. To study leadership, you need to get at it from three perspectives, theory, history, and experience, so T-H-E. And all three of those are crucial, so like three legs of a stool. If you've got theory and history, but you don't have experience, you're not talking about practical experience, how you apply these today, then you're at risk of ivory tower solutions. It's like trying to make breakfast with a chocolate frying pan. Not only is it not going to work, but you're probably going to make a mess. If you have theory and experience, but you don't have history, then you are likely to fall victim into fads. So hook, line, and sinker. And I remember growing up in the 80s and 90s, we had things like the one-minute manager, management by walking around as opposed to management by sitting in my chair. And so you're going to lose perspective. You're going to have all of these fads. We got our fads today. And then if you are lacking theory, you're lacking big ideas, then you're in this tactical hamster wheel. You're going to be like the chess player who thinks one move at a time. And if your competitor knows the queen's gambit, we know who's going to win that exchange.
Exactly. And you say something that's very interesting and very basic. Leadership requires a deep understanding of human nature. And I think so often we overlook that. There's part psychologist in being a good leader, isn't there?
Well, yeah, absolutely. You've got to help people connect emotionally to their work and help people, see their work in terms that really that really move them. Their bigger why. You know, I don't know if you've ever heard the bricklayer story.
No. What? No. Tell me about that.
Yeah. So the bricklayer story, a consultant like me, is walking along and sees a person laying bricks. And a consultant says, what do you do? And a bricklayer says, I'm laying bricks because that's what I do and that's what I enjoy doing. Okay. He walks to the second bricklayer and he says to that bricklayer, I said, bricklayer, what are you doing? And that bricklayer says, I'm building a cathedral. He then walks on to the third bricklayer and he asks that bricklayer, what are you doing? And that bricklayer says, I am bringing people closer to God. So I've got to credit one of my mentors, Alan Weiss, with that. But I think some people will interpret the third bricklayer as the one who's really in connection with, you know, with the why.
Yes.
I'm not so sure about that. I think all three bricklayers can be in touch with their why, but just for different reasons. So the first bricklayer may just love working with his hands and wants to be able to put food on the table, provide for the family, and, you know, honest days work for an honest day's pay, and that's what he loves. And that's great. That's how he's connected emotionally to his work. The second bricklayer, well, she may love artistry and loves to build impressive things. And so that's how she's connecting emotionally. And then third person connects emotionally by moving people's spirits. And so all three, I think, are examples of people who can connect emotionally to their work. And that's one of the things that leaders provide. And studying human nature, as the ancient Greeks did, you learn that, you know, people are motivated by different things. Different things motivate different people, no surprise there. But getting to know who they are and getting to see what moves them is vitally important to helping to achieve buy-in for the kinds of things that you want to do as an organization.
Our guest on the program is Christopher Kolenda. That's K-O-L-E-N-D-A. The book is Leadership, The Warrior's Art. This is the second edition. You'll find it at Amazon, Barnes & Noble, all of the usual bookstores. StrategicLeadersAcademy.com is Christopher's website. Information there as well. Let's talk about the role of discipline. That's one of the key elements, military strategy, business strategy as well. Define discipline and how that's – discipline isn't punishment, is it?
No, and it's an important distinction that you raise. So there's intrinsic discipline and extrinsic discipline. So we often think of discipline as extrinsic. You know, discipline is punishment. You know, North Korean soldiers goose-stepping in parades and things like that. And that is an example of extrinsic discipline. It's discipline that's imposed from without. And the challenge with extrinsic discipline is when that supervisor, if you will, is no longer present, then people, because they don't have buy-in, people are just going to go back to doing what's comfortable, what they were doing beforehand. Intrinsic discipline happens when you know the difference between right and wrong in terms of the standards and expectations, and you do what's right regardless of who's watching, even when nobody's watching. So when you look at organizations that have intrinsic discipline as opposed to ones that don't, so you can kind of do a double axis chart, if you will. On a north-south axis, you have clarity about your common good. So common good, your mission, vision, goals and values, standards and expectations. And on the east-west axis, you have buy-in. When you have an organization, we start with the upper left, that has clarity about its common good, but low levels of buy-in, then you have a compliance culture. You have a culture in which your leaders are focused solely on supervision, making people do their jobs. And the cost of that is you're not focusing on strategy and growth and innovation. You don't have time for it because you're so busy making sure people are doing their jobs.
Yes.
When you get into the lower left, where you've got low clarity and low buy-in, then you've got a chaotic culture where the office alphas are simply having their own fiefdoms and doing their own thing because they're not bought in and they have no idea what they're really supporting other than naked self-interest. When you get to the lower right, where you've got high levels of buy-in but low clarity, I see this a lot with small businesses, where you've got a group of founders, a group of people who've known each other for a long time. They've got this implicit understanding of the common good, so they don't bother to write it down. And that works all well and good for them until one of two things happens. Either some of those founders leave or get replaced by others without the same implicit understanding, or you try to scale. And as you scale and you're bringing new people without that implicit understanding of the common good, then you tend to backslide inevitably towards this chaotic culture. The upper right, of course, where we want to be, what I call an inspiring culture, where people know the difference between right and wrong. They're intrinsically motivated to do the right thing because they believe in it, because they've got buy-in, and they know exactly what they're buying into. And when you have that sort of culture, then you got leaders who can focus on strategy, growth, and innovation because they know that their employees are doing the right things.
The book is Leadership, The Warrior's Art. Christopher Kolenda is our guest and the author. Book available wherever books are sold. His website, strategicleadersacademy.com. Go to our website, thisweekinamerica.us, link on directly to Christopher's website and get information. You use the term buy-in there a number of times. Let's go back and spend a couple of minutes talking about that. How do we get buy-in?
Sure. That's one of the central questions for leaders. And one of the great mythologies about the military is that we just simply order people around and they do as they're told.
Yes.
Like automatons. And I like to say that there's really no such thing as military leadership. You know, there's just leadership and it's applied in different contexts. And one of the things that differentiates leaders is their ability to gain buy-in. We need to gain buy-in in the military, just like you need to gain buy-in in other, you know, in the private sector or in the public sector. How you go about it might be a little bit different, but you generally have three principles to buy in, like a three-circle Venn diagram. So you've got to have clarity. People need to know what they're buying into, so clarity about the common good. The second circle is enlightened self-interest. So people have to see themselves as better off. And then third is accountability. There got to be consequences for doing the right thing, consequences for doing the right thing awesomely, and then consequences for awful. And again, you've got to have all three. You've got to have all three to have buy-in. So if you've got clarity and self-interest, but you've not got no accountability, then you're inevitably going to get backsliding. People aren't going to be able, nothing you do is going to be repeatable. If you have clarity and accountability, but there's no, people don't see themselves as better off, then you're just going to get compliance behavior. And finally, if you've got enlightened self-interest and accountability, but there's no clarity about the common good, then you get this fiefdoms problem where everybody's doing their own thing and not working towards the common good. You know, you can buy a lot of things on Amazon. One of the things that you can't buy is buy-in. You can't order it on Amazon. Yes. You can't get it delivered to your front door. You got to earn it. And the way you earn it is starts with those three things.
You know, accountability is so important. And you talk about, as a leader, accountability begins in the mirror. Talk about that, because maybe it's overlooked that when you're thinking about accountability, I'm sort of the example. I'm the one that needs to be able to illustrate this to everyone by my actions.
Yeah, leaders have got to be exemplars. If you're going to have accountability, it starts with you. You've got to model the behaviors. If you go to a Civil War battlefield, you'll see all sorts of leaders on horseback, statues of leaders on horseback. And the reason why leaders rode horses in Civil War battles is not because they were privileged or because they were lazy, but in part it was because they could see a little bit better. So you're higher up when you're on a horse, of course. More importantly, it was because they were the most vulnerable person on the battlefield.
Yes.
They're being the exemplar because everybody's shooting at them. Everybody's shooting at the person on the horse. So the message is, if I can stand my ground and do my job while I am the most vulnerable person on the battlefield, then everybody else can do the same. When you look at the difference between the collapse of the Afghan government about a year ago and the resilience of the Ukrainian people, again, it's the exemplar. So when push came to shove in Afghanistan, Afghan senior leaders just simply took the money and ran. And the whole government and military collapsed all around them like a house of cards. When Russia invaded Ukraine and President Zelensky was asked, or was told that he could have a ride out.
Yeah, we'll send a plane for you.
Yeah, we'll send a plane for you. He said, don't give me a ride, give me more ammo. And he rallied the Ukrainian people to fight a superior foe in the Russians. And now Ukraine is starting to turn the tables. I mean, we'll see if it's sustainable, but they're starting to turn the tables on the Russians. So his leading by example, being the exemplar, was a key part of the Ukrainian resilience. And so it starts in the mirror. We've got to model the behaviors that we want people to follow, the standards and expectations. I mean, if we don't, we're a hypocrite. If we only do it sometimes and not other times, then people see us as inconsistent.
Yes.
And then if we're playing favorites, then people are just going to see the rules as arbitrary. So when we live the values that we expect, then people start to believe in them. They believe in what they say, not what they hear or what they read.
Our guest is Dr. Christopher Kolenda. The book is Leadership, The Warrior's Art, the second edition. Take a brief break. Much more to talk about on today's program, and we continue after these messages. We're back. You're listening to This Week in America. Christopher Kolenda, K-O-L-E-N-D-A, the author of Leadership, The Warrior's Art, with us on the program. Before we left, you were talking about the situation in Ukraine. Contrast the leadership styles between Zelensky and what people are willing to do for him and Putin, who as a well, I'll let you define it. Talk about the difference in styles and why one seems to be working and one isn't working so well.
Well, one of the things, Zelensky is leading from the front. I mean, don't give me a ride, give me more ammo.
Exactly.
It was such a powerful statement. He understands, I mean, he was a former comedian, so he understands stage presence. He understands how everybody's looking at him and how he's got to perform as a leader. It seems that he is listening to advice from people that he's not freebasing his own gunpowder, so to speak. He's not getting high off his own fumes. He's actually listening to advice and letting people do their jobs. With Putin, it seems like he's surrounded himself with sycophants, people who are going to tell him exactly what he wants to hear. And the message is, going into Ukraine is going to be a cakewalk. They're going to greet us as liberators. I mean, we kind of heard some of the same stuff in 2003 and with the Iraq invasion. And so when you surround yourself with people who are just going to tell you what you want to hear, the probability of making bad decisions increases substantially. So having trusted advisors, having people who are willing to tell you the truth and be candid, is one of the differences between, great leaders, leaders who are very effective, and ones that wind up making horrible decisions because they've been breathing their own exhaust for so long.
Christopher Kolenda, our guest on the program, the book Leadership, The Warrior's Art. One chapter in the book is developing operational leaders who happen to be women. We've got a couple minutes here. Talk about the importance of that, because in the military and in business, fortunately, we're at a time where women are coming into top positions. Talk about doing that the right way.
Yeah. So one of the things that we wanted to do, this book is in a second edition. It first came out just before September 11th, 2001. And I mean, over 60,000 people have been using it for their leader development programs. People took it with them into combat. And speaking with the publisher about a year ago, we said, a lot of things have changed since September 11th. We've had all of the wars of the last 20 years. We've had the repeal of Don't Ask, Don't Tell. And we've had the elimination of the combat exclusion rule. So all specialties in all branches of service are open to men and women alike. And so we thought one of the key chapters that we needed to add in this updated version was one about helping women. How do you develop women as combat leaders? And also we added another chapter on how sexual harassment, yes, assault, and hazing damage unit cohesion and readiness. And so there are a lot of great insights just about why leaders should put the academic term is a gendered lens. But the real term is empathy. You've got women who are leaders. You got women in your formation. How do you set up your, how do you do things that make sure that they feel valued, that life is as easy for them as possible so they can do their jobs. I mean, one great example is all military uniforms and helmets and body armor and things like that were all fit for the male body. And so when women were wearing it, it didn't look right on them. So we need to do things like make helmets and make body armor and uniforms that are more tailored to women's bodies so they can perform more effectively. That's just one example of many that they offer in that wonderful chapter.
The book is Leadership, the Warrior's Art. The author, Christopher Kalinda, is our guest on the program. I'll take a couple minutes here. In battle and business, most battles are not won through brute force, but through leadership brilliance. Just talk briefly about that, because sometimes we think a good leader is someone who just sort of bowls through the situation, and that's not really the case, is it?
No, that review is from Alan Weiss, and I'm very, very grateful for it. We've talked about a lot of these different principles already, where leaders have got to be able to set the example. They've got to be able to gain buy-in from people, help people connect emotionally with their work, help them, put them in a position where they're using their natural strengths every day at work. When you do so, they're like 2 to 3 times more productive than people who are just sort of grinding away and not feeling like they're using their natural strengths. A great example, Battle of Gettysburg, was Joshua Chamberlain at Little Round Top. He was given 120 deserters on the eve of the battle. And then Chamberlain is put in the far left flank of the Union line. And when Chamberlain was given these 120 deserters, you know, he was authorized to shoot them if he, yes, wanted to. He could have ordered them into the line or whatever. Instead, what he did was he gained their trust. He treated them with respect, and he gained their buy-in. And ultimately, 117 of the 120 grabbed muskets and stood their ground at Little Round Top. The result was a 33% increase in Joshua Chamberlain's force there. And that made the crucial difference at the second day of the Battle of Gettysburg. Had they not been there, his position would have been overrun, and the whole Union line would probably have collapsed.
A perfect place to tie up what we've been talking about on the program. Christopher Kalinda, K-O-L-E-N-D-A, is the author and our guest on the program. The book is Leadership, the Warrior's Art. You'll find it at all the usual places, and his website, strategicleadersacademy.com. I want to take just a minute or so here to talk about something major that's coming up in your life. This is a 1,700-mile cross-country journey to honor 6 fallen heroes, something that's very meaningful to you. This is going to be a grueling experience for you to go through. Briefly talk about what it is, and then we'll give some information how people can contribute.
Thanks, Rick. As you mentioned, 6 of my soldiers, I led a force about 800 paratroopers in eastern Afghanistan in a 15-month deployment in 2007 and 2008. It was a long time. And in 2007, the area we were in was one of those violent in the country. And 6 of our paratroopers were killed in action in that time. And, you know, they were part of something extraordinary, which you mentioned earlier, where, you know, they managed to motivate a large insurgent group to stop fighting and to switch sides. So we're coming up on the 15-year anniversary of that deployment, and I wanted to do something special to acknowledge their service and sacrifice. I mean, they had my back for 15 months. They did what I asked them to do, and they did it to a very high standard. And so I wanted to do something significant. I wanted, and that included visiting their graves. And I figured I could drive the 1,700 miles. You know, they're buried from Nebraska, almost due east to Arlington National Cemetery. So it's 1,700 miles. I could drive it, but that just didn't seem quite substantial enough. I could walk the distance, but it just take way too long. It's just prohibitive. So I said to myself, this is about 17 months ago. I know I can pedal a bike. I can pedal a bike 1,700 miles. The only problems were that I didn't own a bike and I hadn't ridden a bike in 20 years. So I was like, all right, well, I ain't getting any younger. If I'm going to do this, I'm going to do it now. And so I went out and bought a road bike. I hired a cycling coach to get my butt in shape and for this ride. And then I started telling people so I don't chicken out. and so that starts on September 25th. I'm going to start at Chris Pfeiffer's gravesite. The reason I'm starting that day is because he died of wounds that day in 2007. And his daughter was born 2 days after that. Wow. So she never met her dad. Chris fought for his life for a month and then died of wounds September 25th. And Peyton was born 2 days later. Chris's parents, Mike and Darlena, his wife, Karen, his widow, Karen, and his daughter, Peyton, will all be there on the 25th. And this ride is going to not only honor the dead, but support the living. After 15 years, most of our paratroopers from that unit are approaching age, 35 to 45. A lot of them are in this sort of midlife crisis, age, if you will.
Yes.
And, some have found new belonging and they're soaring to new heights. We want to help them. Some are in this midlife crisis and we want to help them bounce back. Others have gone into a very dark place. One of our best non-commissioned officers from the unit back in 2007, he now lives in a dumpster. Wow. In outside of a city library in Northern California. And he's a meth addict. And he's one of several stories like that. And I mean, I've been very fortunate this last 15 years. I can't just stand by and know this is happening and to people who've had my back and not try to do something about it. And so the ride is going to raise funds for the Saber 6 Foundation, which is going to help our veterans and their families and descendants support those who need help and help them achieve new dreams.
You can do that. I believe honorride.us is a website where you can get information on the ride. The Fallen Hero Honor Rides is a GoFundMe page, so you can go there and participate as well. And we'll have all that available as well. So inspirational what you're doing, and would love to have you come back sometime and just talk about that and talk about what everyone goes through in adjusting. One statistic, over 7,000 American service members were killed in Afghanistan and Iraq. In the war's aftermath, over 30,000 have committed suicide. It's just tragic, and we keep talking about it. I hope we're making progress, and I would love to continue that conversation. Christopher, it's been a pleasure having you on the program. The book is A Leadership, The Warrior's Art, second edition. Thank you so much, and best of luck on the 1,700-mile trip. On the bicycle part, we'll come back real quick once you're out on the road for 1,700 miles. Good luck with that, sir, and thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me, Rick. It's delightful being on your program.
Thank you. A pleasure to have Christopher Colenda with us. The book, The Warrior, Leadership, The Warrior's Art. Information on our website, thisweekinamerica.us. We're back after these messages.
You're listening to This Week in America with Rick Bratton. More after this.